Someone had sent me an email about 3 days ago who had been through a lot of stuff in life.
Okay.
So the question was, how can I be detached? I want to be detached now because I have seen too much in life. And someone probably in their late 30s. So my answer was that you cannot be detached. You cannot do anything to be detached. Because detachment happens. The me cannot try to be detached because that is the me trying to do something to be detached, which is yet another attachment. It creates more doership because now the me wants to be detached.
Yeah.
Detachment is a natural process which should be allowed to take its course. You see, when you have enough experience in life, setbacks, things not going your way, you realize that the happiness you were deriving from objects, from people, from situations is a happiness which cannot be trusted because it does not last. This understanding brings about detachment. It is a natural phenomenon because the ego realizes that I cannot derive my sense of self from something which is external to me, because that is a cheat, because that does not last. And that understanding brings about dispassion and detachment. But what happens is the ego feels that I have been too attached to objects and now I will be detached.
Yeah.
So it enhances the doership and that enhances the suffering. To try to be detached creates further suffering. But that is how the ego operates. And it is everyone's honest truth, everyone's, that when happiness is derived from an external source, it will let you down. That is the nature of life and living. So my answer was, do not try to be detached. Let it happen. The sheer fact that feeling has arisen means you have suffered enough in life, right? Because the feeling, it's a feeling of from your core that I want to be detached, because life has taught you those lessons. So let that take its natural course and you will realize over time that you are not shaken up like you used to be 3 years ago, 5 years ago. Things don't affect you like they used to. Because the natural understanding of life has shown you detachment. There are some people who may not have the destiny to learn that, and they may keep suffering because they keep deriving their sense of self from the externals. That is also possible. But by and large, when the ego is left alone, the job is done on its own. And true detachment leads to stabilizing in what is, because then the ego is not always battling with what is and trying to change situations, change circumstances. And then the what is what is here, right now, present, is allowed to bloom. It may be something pleasant or unpleasant because you are not attached like you used to be.
Just one question. Is then acceptance and surrender also a doership process?
No. Acceptance and surrender, I would say, are just two different words for the same aspect. But true surrender is the absence of the me who wants to surrender. Because if the me wants to surrender and says, I should surrender, I want to surrender, I have surrendered, that is not true surrender. True surrender is when the me with its sense of doership dissolves. Not my will, O Lord, but thine. Which means that if one is suffering 100%. Because many of us don't suffer 100%. When we are in the midst of suffering, we want to be elsewhere. That creates more suffering. Because we are avoiding what is. But the true sage will suffer 100%. It's not that the sage does not suffer. But the sage is totally present with the suffering. not wanting it to be any other way. The sage will see if there is a way out of suffering as a process, but it is not an avoidance of the suffering. If something can be done, the working mind will come in and say, what are my options, and it will take its course as a natural process. But the ego saying that I want to surrender is the same as saying I want to be detached.
I want to accept or I want to surrender. Again, ego's doership process.
Yes, because true acceptance is the absence of the me which wants to accept. Do you accept deep sleep? Do you have a choice in accepting deep sleep? But deep sleep comes over you as a natural process. So where is the question of acceptance? The ego dissolves in deep sleep. There is no separate ego in deep sleep. Did the ego have a choice? Then why in the waking state it wants to exercise this choice? The absence of the ego which takes place in deep sleep was not up to the ego. So can we allow and trust that process in the waking state? You will be amazed throughout the day how much this keeps coming back. This, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to be like this, I want to be that. It will open a side door, it will open a back door. It's an obsession with the me and my story. So, you know, the inquiry of acceptance, surrender, detachment, it sometimes makes one feel also good. I have seen that. I have seen people say that, I don't go to parties, I don't go to bars. You know, I read these books, I'm trying to be a better person. But it's no different because the me is involved.
Yeah, I've seen this people saying that, and they say, oh, I don't like to have conversation with people anymore because it bores me and it takes my time away from my spiritual path.
Which is fair enough. Which is fair enough because the inquiry has begun. But in order for the inquiry to go deeper, you have to look at things with clarity. That step sometimes takes time and it does not happen. So here it is like a invitation to look at all that. Look at all those aspects. Because the ultimate aim is peace of mind in daily living. Because you have peace of mind in deep sleep. So the aim is not peace of mind in deep sleep. The aim is peace of mind in daily living.
Is it possible?
Of course it is possible.
But consciousness will play, it will not let you be in peace.
Consciousness will not let you be in peace. Consciousness will not let you, the me which is identified with a separate body,
yes,
and name, which thinks it does things, that is the one not at peace. And the realization dawns that if there are people in the world who are at peace, there are people with whom I feel at peace, what is it that they have which I don't? Peace of mind. Ramana Maharshi himself has said when asked by someone, how do I know a sage is a sage? And he says, the degree of peace you feel in the sage's presence and the sense of respect you feel for him will give you that answer.
Like, I was reading this and I wanted to share with you, Nisargadatta Maharaj. He said, once you have seen that you're dreaming, you shall wake up, but you do not see because you want the dream to continue. A day will come when you will long for the ending of the dream with all your heart and mind and be willing to pray any price. The price will be dispassion and detachment, the loss of interest in the dream itself.
Yes.
Is it possible? Why would consciousness want to detach when this is what is keeping it alive, this joy, this juices?
So this joy and juice is not keeping consciousness alive. It's keeping the me alive.
And the me is separate from consciousness?
No, the me is the identified aspect of consciousness. So what Maharaj is saying is when you realize that everything is transient, this too shall pass. All your pleasures pass, all your pains pass. Nothing is permanent. When you realize that, that is when dispassion and detachment start arising. And consciousness takes its position, its true seat, which is the I am, not the me which is attached, not the me which is passionate about things external to itself, but pure being, pure presence. That is the throne of consciousness. When Maharaj says, abide in your beingness, be in the I am, that is to be established not in consciousness. We are all established in consciousness, but Maharaj is saying, be established as consciousness. You have done this enough, and that is why you're buffeted between pleasures and pains. Sometime pleasure, sometime pain. Sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain. So therefore he says, be established as presence, in which, in the field of presence, your life happens. Eckhart Tolle says, you are not what happens, you are the space in which things happen. That presence. And that is a natural journey of life. When there is a natural acceptance of things in life, it will flow. When you go through a rough patch, it will flow. When you go through a smooth patch, it will flow. Because the nature of life is to flow. Let life flow. But the me wants to control the flow of life. I want to control my situation. I want to control my friends. I want to control the outcome of each and everything that is happening. What control are we talking about? We cannot even control our deep sleep, and we want to control everything else. So we cannot control this flow of life. Be still is telling the me to be still. Be still and let life flow. But the me then
don't react.
Wants to do something to be still.
Yes.
Whereas being still is the absence of that which wants to be still. There's no question of don't react. Because if you're programmed to react, you will react. It's based on your conditioning. How your parents treated you when you were a young child. Your reactions are based on your DNA. On the planets in your horoscope, they might be placed in a certain way which makes you a reactive personality. But when the realization dawns that these reactions are biological reactions, the involvement in the reaction which used to be there starts reducing. If one is very reactive to other people and the understanding dawns that it is the same consciousness which functions through everyone, a reaction may still arise as a knee-jerk reaction, but because you do not blame and condemn others, that reaction is not extended in the duration of time, which creates suffering for others as well as yourself. So the nature of the reaction changes. The earlier sting which was there when you were reacting to somebody or situation, that sting gets taken away. But if one is prone to react, one will react.
How does realization then dawn, you see?
This is the realization.
No, this realization, how it comes basically? After suffering only, or it comes, where it comes?
In most cases, suffering is needed for it, unfortunately. That is the nature of life, you know. But it is everybody's experience. It is not unique to certain people. Nobody can say, it's very rare that someone says, I've never reacted from birth.
What you are saying, that if there is no suffering, there is no realization.
So many great people have suffered. You see, because the quest is for true happiness. Supposing happiness was only what we derive from pleasures and life was only pleasure, which it can never be, there would be no realization. The quest is, what is true happiness, which is permanent, which is not dependent on anything. The happiness which you think is happiness is actually not the happiness which is of any worth. True happiness is peace. True happiness is not an experience from which happiness is derived. Supposing your life was full of suffering from morning to night, you know what your true happiness would be? Deep sleep, right? So now you know that my life has been so full of suffering that the peace I look forward to is when I'm fast asleep, right? So you know what true happiness for you is. True happiness for you is that which does not depend on something which happens, because your true nature is that which is in deep sleep And that which is in deep sleep is also in the waking state. So your true happiness is not going anywhere.
Yes.
Why? Because it is always there. It is covered by layers of doership and the me. Because something which is there in deep sleep and in the waking state, because the only difference between the waking and deep sleep state is consciousness in one is impersonal and the other it is identified. Impersonal in deep sleep where there is no me, and in the waking and dreaming states there is identification with the name and form as a separate entity. But the foundation of your life is deep sleep in the sense that the identified consciousness is not present throughout your life. So then the investigation begins, what is this thing which troubles me in the waking state? Why does it trouble me? And then you go into your own experience and you feel so content. Small things will start giving you happiness. Your cup of tea which you have in the morning, looking out of the window. You don't need things to happen anymore to derive that happiness, because you're going towards true happiness, which does not need a reason. True happiness does not need a reason. True happiness is the absence of that which needs the reason to be happy, which is everybody's experience, but some come to it later, some come to it in time, depending on their destiny. Jnaneshwar has a saying in the Jnaneshwari. He says, we are all drawing maps of the clouds in the sky. That is what we do in life. Everything changes. Everything depends on so many factors. But we are drawing maps of clouds in the sky, thinking this is my life, this is here, that is there, that is there. But then something comes and just shifts everything around. And then we resist that. We fight that. We want that cloud to be there and that cloud to be there.
So what is the purpose of us being here? Why, like the I am, why there is I am then? What is the need for this this identified consciousness? Why is it there to begin with?
So this questioning has to be looked at the other way. Who is the one asking what is the purpose of the me? It is the me itself.
Yeah. And why is it asking then? Why it wants to know?
Exactly. Now, if you look at it from another perspective, what is the purpose of life? If someone was to ask you, what is the purpose of life? What would be the true and honest answer? Based on simple daily living, nothing esoteric, nothing like the big purpose of life.
To live.
The purpose of life is to let life flow. Your time on the planet is fixed.
Yes.
You were born. The body was born, the body will die. What is the purpose of life in between? And what is that purpose of life which was never asked in the deep sleep state? In the deep sleep state, you don't ask what is the purpose of life. So what is it? Is to let the purpose fulfill itself. When you step out of your own way, there is a higher power, there is the source. So being connected to the source, by stepping out of your own way to allow, let life flow, to allow that flow to happen is the purpose of life. Because otherwise there is no purpose. The purpose is of the me who wants to do something and to have a purpose. It is like Arjuna saying, I am putting my bow and arrow down. What is the meaning of this? What is the purpose of life? I am not supposed to kill my preceptors on the battlefield. What was that? What did Lord Krishna tell him? That even then that act is a sense of doership, because you think you are killing them. But if you let life flow, if you realize that I as time have already killed them and you are the instrument through whom the killing will happen, what is Lord Krishna telling him is let life flow. You have taken ownership of the fact that you are killing your relatives, your preceptors. But if you look deeply, your whole conditioning is that of a warrior. You were trained to be a warrior. You were trained to fight. You were trained to excel in that. You are faced with a situation in life where a decision has to be made. And I am just pointing out to you that nobody in this play has actually done anything because I am all. In other words, let life flow.
Yes, so there is no point in regretting things because it is supposed to be this way, you know, life is supposed to be this way, right?
Regret may arise, but there will be no blame that I should not have been like that. That stops. Regret may arise. We may feel regret at various things in life. But immediately the understanding is that I didn't do it. It happened. In spite of my best intentions, it happened. What stops? Blame for myself, blame towards others, condemnation, hate, ill will, spite, envy, jealousy, that drops. And believe you me, that's a lot of baggage being dropped. So many of us hate ourselves.
I think most of us.
So many of us blame ourselves, condemn ourselves.
Full of guilt and shame.
Full of guilt and shame for something we did, which we didn't do. So much guilt.
But if you tell somebody, no, I was just an instrument, I didn't do it, they will not believe you. Yeah.
No, you see, because that is operating at an intellectual level.
In the perspective of the society.
Yes, absolutely. So much social conditioning. I will give you a very simple daily living example of a couple I know who the marriage has been over 10 years ago. But for the sake of society, they are together. Can you see the social pressure that one has built for oneself? That one is compromising one's peace of mind because of the social conditioning. It's such an important factor for us. But we have been shaped by society. We have been shaped by where we were born, by the income level of our parents, because that determined which school we were going to. Then we got shaped by school. We got shaped by our friends. If there was a bully in school who bullied us, we got shaped by that because we became afraid. So many of us are afraid, and we don't want to be afraid. But one should not be afraid to be afraid. One should not be afraid to be afraid because you didn't make yourself afraid. Life did. Circumstances did. Some people are timid. Some people are aggressive. You didn't choose to be timid. Life made you timid. What is there to feel bad about? What is there to say that I should be strong because I should not be timid? That is creating suffering. Your nature, if it's one of being timid, accept it. Thereafter, if you want to do anything, by all means. But there should be no resistance to, I am timid, I should not be timid. God made you that way. Accept it. Don't blame yourself. Don't feel bad that you're timid. Accept it. Don't be afraid to be afraid. There was a song I remember, this group called Enigma. Return to Innocence, where one line was, don't be afraid to be weak and don't be too proud to be strong. That is so beautiful. And why don't be proud to be strong? Because you didn't choose to be strong. Pride comes in because you feel you did something. And then that gets followed by arrogance. One man had come to my guru's satsang and he kept talking about how successful he was in business. It was incredible to see. And so Ramesh let him speak and then said, and I remember Ramesh's body language. He says, but sir, where can I buy that success? Can you tell me? So the man looked at him a bit perplexed that what is he saying? So Ramesh said, but you're saying I am successful. I have done this. I have become that. Then I would like to know where even I want to be successful. Where can I get it? Which, in other words, was that because it was your destiny to be a success, you were successful. So where is this pride coming from? You were given a set of attributes, you were given conditioning through which you bloomed into a success. Circumstances supported you, the business environment supported you, so you became successful. But where is the question of you being a success? But you see, one thing about reading books, spiritual books, is if you resonate with something in it, it may appear that, oh, I read these three lines and this is something which resonates with me. But the reason it resonates with you is because that is already your experience.
Yeah, absolutely correct.
Beautiful.
So actually what is happening is it is a recognition.
Yeah.
But the mind being the mind thinks it has learned something new and says, wow. You cannot say wow unless you know what it is already, you see. But the mind thinks that it has acquired new knowledge and it's like, huh.
But it exactly happens during music also.
Absolutely.
It hits you sometimes.
Absolutely.
You say, oh.
Absolutely.
So whether you knew that swar.
Yes.
Within yourself or
yes.
Or you are realizing it now.
You knew it.
So Gautam, we have to be silent then.
Ultimately, that is our nature. Yeah, but on a more pragmatic level, the silence is the silence of the thinking mind. The silence is the silence of the thinking mind, which either is always living in the past or projecting into an imaginary future. So it begins with that reducing. And silence outside is a reflection of the stillness within, because the stillness within is the stillness of the thinking mind, which earlier was going all over the place like an octopus and its tentacles. That, when that reduces, that is when one becomes still, which is reflected as silence. But some people, their nature is to be talkative, and some people's nature is to be silent. Now, my nature was always to be quiet, and in the third standard, believe it or not, we used to be given these white cards in school, you remember, and I was given a white card, which I still have, for being the quietest and most well-behaved boy in class. And I thought that was a joke because I didn't do anything to be quiet. It's not that I did anything. But by no means, it means that being of a quiet nature is better than being talkative. One's nature may be to talk, but talk about what, I don't know. You see, because sometimes people talk about movies, talk about gossip, talk about all these external things. I'm not referring to that talkative. You may not be in that space, but your nature may still be one of being talkative. Now, my guru loved to talk. So anyone who came in front of him, he'd start a conversation. He would not sit still or look into the eyes. And you know, it was not his nature. So that's the nature.
But was it true that Ramesh did not start talking unless he was authorized to talk to Nisargadatta Maharaj?
Ramesh, it's because Maharaj told him to speak that he started speaking.
But is it also true that realized people want to express their realization?
My view is no. In fact, Maharaj himself has said realized people are very quiet.
So many people write so many books after realization.
That is because of sharing and out of compassion. I must say this.
I was just touching on that.
Yes.
Sharing did say that once you touch that place, you want to share that with them.
See that? Can you say it louder so that they hear it?
Yeah, so there's this Master Shri M. So he's a yogi.
Shri M.
Shri M.
Mm-hmm.
So he said that once you experience the bliss of the self, you want to share that bliss with everyone else.
Even if a person is not talking to you, that happens.
You see, and that is why, because of compassion. Because Shri M and the masters are not talking to separate individuals. They are not sharing their bliss, their experience with people they perceive as separate from themselves. That sharing is the sharing of consciousness, sharing with consciousness.
Difficult to understand.
It is not of a guru sharing with a disciple, because the guru is talking to the guru principle in the disciple. When a disciple comes to a guru, the guru does not see a sense of separation between the guru and disciple. It is the disciple which sees that. The guru is talking to himself, as Maharaj would say, I am talking to that which is in me and which is in you as well. Only you don't know it. So they don't view it that way. And this is the sharing which arises out of compassion, because they have seen the light. It is not to show their realization that they are sharing it.
Yeah, That is what I was trying to understand.
Yeah,
is there effort to show the realization?
But the source can also give pain. If it is one's destiny to receive pain, one will receive the pain. But as again Ramesh would say, life is imprisonment. But what we do is we convert the simple imprisonment to rigorous imprisonment.
Yeah.
Imprisonment it is. You're imprisoned in this body, yeah? What is timeless and boundless, free, formless, indivisible, never-ending, everlasting, unchanging, has got trapped. And then we start making the imprisonment rigorous. How? By blame, condemnation, guilt, shame, jealousy, envy, hatred, malice, ill will, spite. For what? I should have been this, I should have done that, I should be a better person, that person is hurting me. Who does this fellow think he is? My boyfriend ruined my life, my girlfriend did this to me. Kya ho raha hai?
But then Ramana Maharshi said that even the ego is not real. It's like the rope that you think is a snake.
Yes, but in your daily living, your ego is very much real.
Or it feels real.
In your daily living, it is real. Because that is an aspect which is even provided by the divine. Ego, which is identification with name and form as a separate entity, is real. That is why even a sage will respond to his name being called. Right? But it is the sense of doership in the ego which needs to be uprooted. Because the ego believes that it is the doer. That is the hypnosis, which also was not the ego's choice. We are trying to untie a knot which we didn't tie. The source tied the knot. So leave it to the source to untie the knot. And what can you do? You know, I used to always say, if I was confronted by a situation, what to do? Now what happened? It's quite funny. At my marriage time, one of my friends came down from Paris. American man living in Paris. So everyone spoke a few words. So this guy said that the most hilarious time for him was, it was another friend's 40th birthday, and I was a bachelor, this American guy was a bachelor, and a third guy was a bachelor, so we were all bundled into one room, which we were bugged about, because just because we are bachelors, why should three of us be in one room, right? Now, it so happened that the third friend loved his drink, and he drank and drank, and he was drunk. Which was okay, no problem. But when it came to go and sleep in the room, this man hit the bed and started snoring louder than a lion's roar. Now, I'm sitting on one side, my American friend is sitting on one side, and he's like saying, okay, now how do we solve this problem? So I said, let's wake him up. We tried waking him up, shaking him, but he kept snoring and snoring and snoring, and now it was getting late. So, this American guy said that this is ridiculous, you know, I mean, should we try lifting him up and putting him in the bathroom or something? Whatever he tried, then he put pillows to, you know, like cover the noise and all that, nothing worked. So he said, Gautam, how do we handle the situation? And I said, what to do? We don't sleep. So he remembered that. You see, he remembered that and he said, so, you know, even this what to do has become a mantra for me. Because beyond a point, what can you do here? If life gives you a guy who's going to snore all through the night, what can you do? You lose your sleep, na? Worst case scenario is you'll lose your sleep. It's incredible. Like, again, some friends were in Bombay in the monsoons and we met for a coffee and the guy was complaining about the weather. Just complaining, you know, just everything gets wet, you can't go anywhere, streets get flooded and on, and then he said, doesn't it really disturb you? I said, what to do? What to do? So life becomes like that, you know. Your complaints reduce. Your complaining, which you derive your sense of identity and self from, starts reducing. Your life is no longer a living complaint. But it's beautiful because I truly feel that even gatherings like this, you know, one, it's like a coming home. When I was young, I would spend, of course, I spent 10 years with Ramesh, but it felt nice. So then, like you say, you know, if you have no interest to be in a bar with your friends, you know, but you prefer a preference arises for a gathering like this. Because the awakening has started, therefore the preference. The preference arises to read certain kinds of books because the spark has been lit not by you, by your life circumstances, which were gifted by the source. So the source is bringing you back to the source, and it's quite beautiful. The difference being that hopefully it is a lived experience in daily living, not a theoretical experience in daily living. So when I gave a talk in Pune recently, at the end one lady came. She has a group which is into bhakti, and I spoke a bit on bhakti. But my point was that what is the point of bhakti, you know, and worshipping Lord Krishna and all that, if your relationships in daily living are a mess? Because then you have isolated your experience to you and God as a form, but your daily living, there is no change. But true bhakti is if you can see the same source functioning in everyone, that is living bhakti. When your relationships are harmonious, that is bhakti being lived. Because ultimately, all relationships are your relationship with yourself. So when you don't hate anyone, that is bhakti. When you don't blame anyone, that is bhakti. When you don't condemn anyone, that is bhakti. When in daily living, you have the knowing that it is the same consciousness which animates all of us. We are all programmed based on our conditioning, based on our DNA, based on what happened to us. That is bhakti. What happens? You become comfortable with others and you become comfortable with yourself. You may still have a preference to be with certain people and not be with certain other people. That is a natural preference. But when the relationships are harmonious, you're living bhakti. Because there are people who attend lectures on Vedanta, but is it translating into daily living? That, because otherwise attending lectures on Vedanta can just strengthen the ego. That is why I am so grateful to God that for me, my journey was the inverse. I was meeting people who were showing me the daily living aspect, and then the reading came later. I never read these kind of books. For me, the understanding happened through being shown life's situations, and then thereafter, I would read books like I Am That and all that stuff. But I'm very grateful, because if it was the reading first, and just being stuck at theory and no impact in daily living, there's no worth in that. The ultimate worth is peace of mind, is the priceless gift of the sages, is peace of mind. See, everything has its purpose. Some we may not be able to understand, some we can. But the caution here is not to get stuck in the story. You see, now supposing in the esoteric circles, they talk about the ascended masters and, you know, this being here, that being there, and all that is fine. If you resonate with it, why not? Nothing can be rejected. But my point is that will you live in that space of just being fascinated by all this, or will it translate to your daily living? If you enjoy reading esoteric philosophy, by all means, because that's a natural thing which arises for you. But to be clear, what is it that I am seeking? And invariably the answer is peace. And then to see your daily living, you know, so some people feel this is too simplistic an approach, but I do feel that the reason we are here is to untie the knots of daily living and the problems we have created for ourselves. It is like Shirdi Sai Baba says, Rinanubandhan, Rinanubandhan. We are all here because of the cosmic debt of a former relationship, is what he says. Which means life is about relationships. Unless you're in a cave in Rishikesh for the rest of your life, right? But otherwise, we are here because life is relationships. Family, friends, foes, animals, strangers, beggars, are all relationships, rinanu bandhan, and therefore peace of mind through relationships. Isn't that so beautiful? Peace of mind through relationships, when the understanding goes deep down that truly nobody does anything.
We understand that nobody does anything, suppose. And we don't blame for the situation, etc. But when we feel humiliated or insulted, then how to overcome that?
You see, that
still think that dawning is there, that he is not to be blamed.
Yes.
But yes, you are, but you are insulted.
Yes.
And that has gone deep inside you.
Yes.
So
two things happen here. One is, if you are feeling insulted, you must feel insulted. Why? Because you were made that way, right? You cannot claim ownership that I felt insulted. Feel it. But with the understanding, deep down, you will see that this feeling of being insulted will diminish. Why? Because the doership of the me has reduced. You will only feel insulted when you feel I did something and I was insulted. If you didn't have that primary feeling of doing it, you would not feel insulted because you didn't do it. If you had the full understanding that you didn't do it and God did it, no feeling of being insulted would arise.
Subsequent.
Yes, it is a natural process. See, that's what I truly believe, because I have seen it. That what happens with this understanding is, over time, it sinks deeper and deeper and deeper. And when you look back on your life, you will see the changes. You know, when you are taking a driving test, right? You are nervous for the first year of driving. You can't drive through heavy traffic. You're breaking out into a sweat. But 5 years later, let's say you're driving one day and you look back and you say, my God, I did the same stretch so peacefully. Whereas when I took the driving test 5 years ago, I was so stressed. When you look back, then you see the gift of the understanding, because it creates changes. It changes your perspective, changes so much without you knowing. So therefore, my teacher would say, let the understanding do its job. And do not discount an intellectual understanding. Do not discount an intellectual understanding, because that intellectual understanding will eventually sink into the heart. Nothing can be discounted. Because you see, the first step has already been taken. The first step has already been taken, and that has not been taken by you. Therefore, my teacher would say, never consider your glass half empty. Consider it half full. Because if God has brought you so far, why do you think He'll drop you here? And you will then notice that when the quality of your consciousness of daily living changes over time, maybe sometimes it can be transformational, people react to you differently. You get different sets of friends. Things change. Not deliberately done by you. It happens. Yes. Jidhar Nanubandhan khatam hai, ho gaya khatam. You see, because so many of our relationships are there only because we are deriving a sense of self from them. We are playing that game. Those will snap. Because if I don't blame you for something and I've kept blaming you all my life, that is not happening anymore, no? The doership is what dissolves the Rinanubandhan. You're gone. You know, in esoteric circles, they say untying the knots or breaking the cords or cutting the cords is this. If I do not blame you for anything anymore, and I earlier was blaming you, that is cutting the cord, right?
Yeah, because you're also an instrument to polish my consciousness, right? In a relationship.
Everyone is an instrument. Everyone is an instrument.
So there is no blaming, there is no nothing.
How can you blame, you know? Supposing someone has really broken your heart.
Yes.
Firstly, you will have the understanding that this person is the way God created him or her, right? Secondly, it was your destiny to have your heart broken, because otherwise it would not have happened. So you already have this overriding sense that jo hona tha hua, and the other was an instrument through whom it happened. So your that finger pointing, that goes. You may still feel hurt. This does not mean no hurt arises and you're living like zombies. But that hurt is not extended into hate. And you'll wish the other well. Onward journey, peace be with you. But if you truly believed that everyone was functioning based on their conditioning and genetics and how they were shaped by their destiny and God, they are robots, aren't they? Including yourself. People don't like it when they are told that.
They can't take it.
But if everyone in the world had this full understanding that we are a brotherhood of instruments, would there be any war? When the basis of all religions is the same, thy will be done. Inshallah, as the Muslims say. I was planning a trip to Kashmir, so one driver I had met, who I used, I called him 2 days ago. So I said, Tariq bhai, aap hoge kya? Will you be there? He said, zarur, inshallah. Means God willing. That is the basis of all the religions. The Hindu religion says, as my guru would say, that you think I am speaking and you are listening, and when you speak, I listen. But if both of us were not conscious, speaking and listening would not happen. So then who is speaking and who is listening? Consciousness is speaking through one and listening through the other. That is the jugalbandi of life. So on this robot thing, let me read this out. I found it so funny. So this was my first book, Pointers from Ramesh Balsekar. So in the foreword he's written, okay, to be told that he was more a machine than a man, which is me, did not surprise him at all. And that reminds me of a story that I read a long time ago. A large multinational company had to engage a number of people at a fairly high level, and they wanted to be sure that there would not be the slightest prejudice in the selection, and that the selection would be totally objective. So they used a very expensive robot, especially designed for the purpose. One particular candidate soon forgot he was being interviewed by a robot. And while arguing a certain point, he burst out saying, "You are a fool." The robot quietly replied, "Maybe so, my friend, but it is you who is being interviewed for the job." Means what? Means that when someone bugs you or hurts you, it means have the understanding that they are actually truly not doing it in that sense. They are based on the way they have been made.
Can you distinguish between this Advait and Dvait? We are speaking about Advait, so it's one. And then we speak about all the dualities in life, basically. Like there is pain, there is pleasure.
So, you know, I would bring this down again to daily living. Life is duality. Life is black and white, up and down, left and right, front and back, rich and poor,
very much dual,
healthy and handicapped children. Life, the framework of life is duality, you and me. Now, the point is, in the framework of duality, to have the understanding that although it appears like that, it is the same consciousness which is operating through everyone. With that understanding, we do not live in dualism. Duality is you and me, dualism is you versus me. So the understanding of not two, a dvaita, is this, that the nature of life is dvait, but the reality is advait. And then to have it in daily living with the most glorious of outcomes, peace of mind, not two.
Means pain is same as pleasure, something like that.
Why is it same?
Why is it same?
Because both are transient.
No, nothing is possible.
But we prefer pleasures, of course.
You are amazing.